The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at 7 a.m. August 4th, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
K-Voice of Resistance!
Hello, thank you for listening to K-Voice of Resistance. That's the letter K, Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly the Voice.
This is your Resistance podcast.
This quote that the great Joanne Reed posted on her Twitter account has really stuck with me. It's by Octavia E. Butler. Choose your leaders with wisdom and forethought. To be led by a coward is to be controlled by all the coward fears. To be led by a fool is to be led by opportunists who control the fool. To be led by a thief is to offer up your most precious treasures to be stolen. To be led by a liar is to ask to be told lies. And to be led by a tyrant is to sell yourself and those you love into slavery. Pretty dynamite, right? The news. On Tuesday, the Senate confirmed Kevin Newsom, the woman-hating civil rights antagonist to the stolen seat on the 11th Circuit, whom we discussed on Tuesday's show. The final vote, showing that Democrats are willing to roll over when we are not on their asses, was 66 to 31. They also granted us a new FBI director, confirming the somewhat questionable former lawyer of our president's whipping boy, Chris Hot Dog Christie, Christopher Wray, who deleted some Russia ties he had from his firm's website. The vote, in the end, 92 to 5. On Wednesday, the Republicans on the Senate gave unions and the middle class a punch to the gut and confirmed Marvin Kaplan to the board of the NLRB. More on that one in a bit. And on Thursday, in a 79-17 vote, the Senate confirmed Bush veteran Dan Brulé to be Deputy Secretary of Energy. We've talked about him before. The man got 170 environmental groups to come out against him, something I'm pretty sure he considers an endorsement. According to The Hill, Bernhardt is coming from his lucrative job as a lobbyist for the very same groups that he will now have the power to adjudicate for his client's interest as Deputy Secretary of the Interior. This gift horse for Big Oil earned $1.1 million last year lobbying for more than a dozen energy mining firms, including oil and gas companies. Goodbye, national parks. Goodbye, native lands. Goodbye, wolves. Goodbye, endangered species. I'm sorry, future generations, but we have an uneducated, disinterested, racist electorate who can't be bothered to care about you and the world you'll be unfortunate enough to live in. Bye-bye. And while we are saying goodbye, goodbye, unions.
With a Republican Congress and president determined to deliver the knockout blow to the middle class, hardworking Americans need an NLRB that's on their side.
Elizabeth Warren, unions have been suffering for a long time. We knew when Republicans won, it was a good chance what little power our decimated union still had was at risk. And on Wednesday, one more nail got hammered down in organized labor's coffin. The National Labor Relations Board, NLRB, has exclusive authority over many key questions of labor law. Currently, it shields workers and unions from attacks. The reason for that being, it is still, or should I say until Wednesday, was controlled by Democrats. And has been since...
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
Blessed us as president. In a 50-48 vote, breaking a Democratic filibuster on a nomination earlier in the day, the Republicans confirmed one of the two sarcastically and insidiously chosen nominees for the NLRB board. When both nominees sit on the board, we can expect union rights to take a fall like buckshot-filled ducks. While the NLRB employs lawyers who investigate and prosecute certain violations of labor law, the board members themselves function much like judges, sitting in on individual cases and handing down presidential opinions interpreting the rights of workers, unions, and employers. The lucky winner for the role? A former GOP Hill staffer, Marvin Kaplan. Kaplan drafted legislation strongly supported by business lobby groups, which would have made it easier for employers to fight unionization campaigns. Donald's other nominee, William Emanuel, is a veteran management side lawyer who touts his particular expertise with laws concerning union access and private property employers. He also filed briefs in three cases claiming that employers can force workers to waive the right to bring class actions and similar lawsuits. I hope this isn't the end of unions. But elections do have consequences, and the end of unions may very well be one of those. So what should we care, right? I mean, if the Bureau of Labor Statistics is to be believed, only 12% of Americans are union members. From 1973 to 2000, private sector union membership in the United States has declined from 34% to 8% for men and 16% to 6% for women. During this period, inequality in hourly wages increased by 40%. A 2011 study by the American Sociological Association found, quote, a decomposition relating rising inequality to the union wage distribution shrinking weight. We argue that unions help institutionalize norms of equity, reducing the dispersion of non-union wages in highly unionized regions and industries. Accounting for unions' effect on union and non-union wages suggests that the decline of organized labor explains a fifth to a third of the growth in inequality. Unquote. But more than that, unions are instrumental in the functioning of our democracy. The Center for American Progress is one of many to make the argument. Unions help boost political participation among ordinary citizens, especially among members, but also among non-union members, and convert this participation into an effective voice for pro-middle-class policies, as proven by the fact, and I know our friends on the right think facts are boogeymen of lore. But to tell them a nightmarish story, it is a fact that states with higher percentage of union members have significantly higher voter turnout rate, as well as higher minimum wages, a greater percentage of residents covered by health insurance, stronger social safety nets, and a more progressive tax code. They found that unions help get ordinary citizens, union and non-union alike, involved in politics by, for example, knocking on doors, educating workers on the issues, and helping them feel their efforts make a difference. Case in point, a 1% point increase in union density in a state increases voter turnout rates by 0.2 to 0.25 percentage points. According to analysis by Benjamin Radcliffe and Patricia Davis, political scientists at the University of Notre Dame and the State Department, respectively. In other words, if unionization were 10 percentage points higher during the presidential election, 2.6 million to 3.2 million more Americans would have voted. When unions don't run campaigns, working class citizens are 10.4% less likely to vote than other citizens. A similar pattern holds for communities of color. Voters of color are just as likely to vote as white voters in districts with union campaigns, but are 9.3% less likely to vote in districts without campaigns. The United States has one of the lowest voter turnout rates in the industrialized world, an average of 56.9%, and one of the lowest rates of union membership.
See a correlation?
More than that, it is nearly impossible for unorganized citizens of limited means to influence the debate. Unions provide a mouthpiece that is heard by politicians, one of the few voices fighting in Washington for the middle class. Unions provide legal and regulatory expertise, create space for collaborative negotiations, ensure effective implementation of policies, mobilize members at key points in legislative process, and act as a strong counterbalance to powerful interest groups that support policies that would harm the middle class. Historically and today, unions are one of the few organized interests that have a capacity and a mission to launch sustained and successful policy campaigns during drawn-out political battles. And beyond class issues, University of Wisconsin's political scientist Graham K. Wilson argues that unions and union states have had more political success promoting broad social measures such as the Civil Rights Act of 1964 than they have had in promoting measures more strictly tied to their membership. We need labor unions. We need all the help we can get to save our dwindling democracy, our failing middle class, and our vanishing protections and rights. It is not new or a surprise that the party that can win only by cheating and by voter suppression and intimidation would want to shut down one of the few voices speaking out for the middle class and fighting for our rights. This is not new, but the dangers are more real and more present than ever.
They have taken untold millions that they never toiled to earn. But without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong.
The biggest problem in Washington is that this place works great for giant employers and for giant corporations with armies of lawyers and lobbyists. But workers and their families just get ignored. President Trump doesn't seem to have any problem turning his back on millions of hardworking people. But that's not what we're here for. I'll be voting against Marvin Kaplan, and I urge my colleagues to do the same.
The union makes us strong.
This just in from the news desk. The Department of Homeland Security needs to go.
The DHS announced Tuesday that it will use the broad authority granted to it by Congress to waive a host of environmental and land management laws in the way of building the border wall, which begins construction in November. The House Natural Resources Committee argues that there are 93 endangered species potentially affected by construction of the border wall, including jaguars and Mexican gray wolves.
But the good news, according to Donald Trump, it'll be see-through, so at least the wolves can stare at their family members through the wall.
The center is fighting back, at least, and filed suit against the administration last month. Allegedly, the administration failed to perform an environmental study to analyze the impact of slicing delicate ecosystems in half.
Go figure.
But given DHS's ridiculous, broad and overreaching authority, granted when fear overruled reason after 9/11, and granted sweeping powers to an agency that would later go on to be the blunt hammer used by an orange racist oligarch put in place by a foreign hostile country who invaded America's democracy to bludgeon immigrants the foundations of America.
Build that wall!
With our now chief of staff, the heartless, soulless General John Kelly at the helm of DHS.
Are you, the Department of Homeland Security, considering a new initiative that would separate children from their parents if they tried to enter the United States illegally?
Let me start by saying I would do almost anything to deter the people from Central America to getting on this very, very dangerous network that brings them up through Mexico into the United States.
It is now an agency tasked with separating immigrant children from parents and a whole host of human rights abuses in the name of homeland, including the proposed deportation of all undocumented immigrants to Mexico, regardless of the country of origin. That proposal was made in April, if you'll recall. And John Kelly, who is universally praised and respected and celebrated by the media, who's so happy to have an adult in the office, who also took money being used for DHS to advocate on behalf of undocumented immigrants and used it to establish the Victims of Immigration Crime Engagement Office, otherwise known as VOICE, the anti-immigration propaganda office that reports quote-unquote crimes committed by undocumented immigrants to advocate for victims of those crimes.
You suck!
DHS has an undemocratic degree of power for the sole purpose of fulfilling a small man's racist and cruel dreams. Whether or not the current environmental suit succeeds, environmental warriors will not stop at that. It will likely be followed by similar suits as wall construction proceeds, especially as our creepy tweeter-in-chief's absurd wet dream of a budget proposal plans for the wall to extend through Santa Ana National Wildlife Refuge, along the Rio Grande in Texas. Okay, we need to talk about this next unsurprising yet still enraging new evil brought to us by the worst government this country has ever been inflicted with. Now that we are ran by the KKK's reject, the Republicans are fulfilling a long-held dream of smacking minorities down yet another peg, assuring they will never be given the same opportunities they and the rich white children were given. The now sarcastically named Justice Department under Keebler Elf truant officer Jefferson Beauregard Sessions is going to redirect resources of the Justice Department Civil Rights Division into suing universities with affirmative action policies deemed to discriminate against white applicants. Let me be clear. The DOJ is suing schools because white people are supposedly not getting a fair shake in this country. Right. This is bullshit. I try really hard not to cuss on my show. If you know me at all, you have no idea how monumental this task is. Anyways, these Nazi wannabes, it's one thing after another with these hateful morons. According to the New York Times, the project will possibly run out of the division's front office, where the petty-ass administration's political suck-ups, cheats, and liars work, rather than its educational opportunities section, which is ran by career civil servants and normally handles work involving schools and universities. I'm going to say it. I have a problem with affirmative action. White affirmative action. The kind of affirmative action that hands placement to kids because daddy and grandpa went there. These legacy enrollees and donor enrollees. Yeah, I have a problem with that.
And one of the things I've used on the Google is to pull up maps.
Because you can't tell me that W or Donald.
When do we beat Mexico at the border? They're laughing at us, at our stupidity. And now they're beating us economically. They are not our friend.
Had the test scores and the intelligence to go to top schools. There's no way. And for all reports, Golden Boy Jared Kushner is an idiot as well. So, yeah, I have a problem with that. What I don't have a problem with is enrolling a kid to buck institutional race bias. See, the Obama administration's civil rights division made police reform a priority, reaching more than twice as many consent decrees to force police departments to change their practices as any previous administration.
You win!
This one, on the other end, is dedicating itself to white pride, white victimhood, and white power.
Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail victory!
Over the past 20 years, according to Pew, black enrollment in colleges and universities has skyrocketed, which is amazing. What is less amazing is that at top-tier universities, the share of students who are black has actually dropped since 1994. Considering those universities are just about the only universities reported to consider race when accepting applicants, it seems Sessions is on a fool's errand. Sociologists Dan Hirschman of Brown and Ellen Berry of University of Toronto quantified the decline of affirmative action on America's campuses over the last two decades. In 1994, they found about 60% of selective colleges, schools that rejected 15% of their applicants, publicly stated that they considered race in their administration process. By 2014, that number was down to 35%. The vast majority of that drop occurred at lower-ranking schools. Among the 63 institutions deemed most competitive, basically your top-tier schools, 93% considered race in 1994, and in two decades later, that mark barely slipped to 88%. By comparison, the 587 lower-ranking schools that Barron's used dropped from 46% to 18%. So, this waste of money and resources is more dog whistle than anything. In a post-election poll, half of Trump voters said that they thought whites faced a lot of discrimination, more than voters that said blacks, Hispanics, Jews, or Muslims did. And they thought that because of all their research into studies done at Harvard and... just kidding. They don't do studies or research. They thought that because they're ignorant morons who are lied to by their racist white leaders. Oh, the poor suffering white people forced to live with the affliction of white privilege. What are you gonna do? So this is no doubt a dog whistle to Donald's base, but let's not get carried away. Republicans have been the white grievance parties since the Southern Strategy under Nixon, and they have been chomping at the bit to rid what they see as an affront to God's chosen people.
White Christians.
Bush! The Justice Department during the George W. Bush administration also radically reoriented the Civil Rights Division, including using laws historically used to protect minorities in novel ways to police discrimination against whites. I got this from The Atlantic. Justice cut down the number of voter discrimination cases that it brought. It also brought the first case of voter discrimination suit that alleged discrimination against white voters in Noxubee County, Mississippi. I don't know if that's how you say it, but that's how I'll say it. The department also aggressively sought out cases of voter fraud. The parallels between the two administrations continue. Yet despite years of searching,
surprise, surprise,
the department was unable to find any significant organized fraud. What's more, the effort to find fraud eventually led to the Justice Department improperly firing several U.S. attorneys who were unwilling to follow its political agenda. That scandal forced Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez to resign. The point stands that such reverse discrimination cases served a dual purpose. They not only fit with the immediate ideological commitments of the conservative activist in the department, but they also helped push out career staff who objected. Here is the hopeful little note the article from The Atlantic ends on. And I need any hope I can get because right now I'm having trouble producing it on my own. Quote, the voter fraud push produced little, and the attempts to politicize the department ended disastrously. But the prospect of being able to weaken or defeat affirmative action laws that conservatives have long detested make the temptation hard to resist. Unquote.
Shocking.
I don't think I could sit down right now.
You mean?
Historic, astounding, shocking.
It's going to inject a shock to the system.
From U.S. trends to world trends. Europe, Australia, and North America are erecting increasingly elaborate and privatized border fortresses to seal themselves off from people fleeing for their lives. Fleeing, quite often, as a direct result of forces unleashed primarily by those fortressed emerald cities. Whether it was predatory trade deals, unnecessary oil-driven wars, or ecological disasters intensified by climate change, largely accelerated by those wasteful and reckless first-world continents. Naomi Klein makes the point, the hottest and driest places on Earth, Pakistan to Libya, Yemen, Somalia, and Iraq, are on fire with the most intense conflict in the world. Drought and famine are the kerosene conflict, and the people flee. They flee starvation, abuse, and bombs. A foreign army, they flee from their homes, desperate and empty-handed. How easy is it for large majorities to not see the humanity in these people, even as over 1,300 people have drowned in the Mediterranean trying to reach European shores, many of them children and toddlers and babies. They drag themselves to the shores, to the borders of another country, of any other country, having lost many along the journey, only to be put in a prison camp in Australia on the Nauru or Manus Islands, under conditions that numerous humanitarian organizations have described as tantamount to torture, or to the massive, recently demolished migrant camp in France, nicknamed the Jungle. Those in the Emerald Cities can rationalize and dismiss and ignore. It is an echo of the way Katrina's abandoned people were categorized in right-wing media as animals, or the homeless lining the streets in every city of America are kicked, despised, and left to rot, shoved out of the way no more than a nuisance, a blight on the scenery on the drive to work. Globally, the dramatic rise of right-wing nationalism, anti-black racism, Islamophobia, and straight-up white supremacy over the past decade continues, spurred on by these global trends. We see more and more people shot out of the Emerald Cities, out of the green zones, if you will, in society's search for justification. That justification comfortably falling to the, they deserved it, they weren't worthy, they deserved their fate. The only way to justify such barbaric forms of exclusion is to double down on theories of racial hierarchy that tell a story about how the people being locked out of the global green zones deserve their fate, they deserve what's coming to them. Whether it's Trump casting Mexicans as racist or bad hombres, or Syrian refugees as closet terrorists, or prominent conservative Canadian politician Gili Lightich proposing that immigrants be screened for Canadian values. Or successive Australian prime ministers justifying those sinister island detention camps as a humanitarian alternative to death at sea. The Republican Palace in central Baghdad, where security is very tight and all occupants are screened for entry. This is the only place in the city where Westerners from the UK or the USA can walk around the town unarmed and in relative safety from assassination, kidnapping, and car bombs. A red sector generally refers to conditions that exceed safety limits, a region that is dangerous or forbidden. We talked on Tuesday about a recent and alarming uptick in concierge disaster prep that are removing the wealthy among us, the only ones among us for which policy is made, and is removing them from the need for public services and protection. There is also less reason for the big winners of our economy to embrace the demanding policy changes required to prevent an even warmer and more disaster-prone future, which might help to explain the Trump administration's determination to do everything possible to accelerate the climate crisis. Their children, and indeed their class, will be just fine. And their wealth and their connections will protect them from the worst of their shocks to come. Oh, they will lose some beachfront property, sure. But nothing that can't be replaced with a new mansion or higher ground. Naomi Klein makes the point that, quote, in an age of ever-widening income inequality, the significant cohort of our elites are walling themselves off, not just physically, but also psychologically, mentally detaching themselves from the collective fate of the rest of humanity. This secessionism from the human species, if only in their own minds, liberates the rich not only to shrug off the urgent need for climate action, but also to devise even more predatory ways to profit from current and future disasters and instability. What we are hurtling toward is a world demarcated into fortified green zones for the super rich, red zones for everyone else, and black sites for whoever doesn't cooperate. Unquote. We are the country that built itself on the backs of slaves stolen from their homelands, on the land we stole from slaughtered indigenous peoples in the name of wealth and comfort, a country that has never given such abused peoples a full seat at the table since. We are a country that has never atoned for our sins. We are a country that will have no problem dissolving into an American Baghdad once things get bad enough. Us in the red zones and all those who fight day and night to keep us in our place and lower in the green. Trump is just one early and vicious manifestation of that unraveling. But he is not alone, and he won't be the last. We have looked closely at the large-scale shocks that are... President is looking to harness in order to ram his despised pro-corporate and anti-democratic policies that would have never been feasible in normal times, and the realities of such shocks make it hard to see a future that ends well for us. I'll let Naomi Klein bring this grim assessment home. Quote, we have long imagined the ends of our society, that the walled city, the wealthy few live in relative luxury while the masses outside war with one another for survival is pretty much the default premise of every dystopian sci-fi movie that gets made these days, from Hunger Games, or in Western religions, in their grand narratives of great floods washing the world clean and a chosen few selected to begin again. We have collectively imagined this extreme winners and losers ending in our species so many times that one of our most pressing tasks is learning to imagine other possible ends to the human story in which we come together in crisis rather than split apart, tank down borders rather than erect more of them. Wasn't that the point of that dystopian art? Was never to enact as a temporal GPS showing us where we are inevitably headed. The point was to warn us, to wake us. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. So said Thomas Paine many years ago, neatly summarizing the dream of escaping the past that is at the heart of both the colonial project and the American dream. The truth, however, is that we do not have this godlike power of reinvention, nor did we ever. We must live with the messes and the mistakes that we have made, as well as within the limits of what our planet can sustain. But we do have it in our power to change ourselves, to attempt to right past wrongs, to repair our relationships with one another and with the planet we share. It is this work that is the bedrock of the resistance, unquote. And that is where we face our most difficult challenge in the resistance. It is not stopping something in the moment or simply being reactionary when needed, but stepping up and stepping out. We need to create something new, something better, to create a different way. We cannot count on others to take us there. We are the ones, and now is our time. Thank you for listening to my show. I promise to be less grim on Tuesday's episode. You can find my show on crabdiving.com, that's one word, C-R-A-B-D-I-V-I-N-G, under the K-Voice tab. Listen to the other great programming on the network, and you can also find my show on Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice, and of course on Facebook at K-Voice of Resistance. All right, take care of yourselves out there, and as always, resist.
In our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the Union makes us strong.